So it's 2 o'clock. I think we should start. If you're not for the Kubernetes talk, you're wrong here. But if you are, you're right. I'm going to tell you about my journey building a Kubernetes cluster from scratch, the hard way. My name is Alain van Hoof. I'm a HPC consultant in the TUE TU Eindhoven Supercomputing Center. I attended the config management camp for the first time. Although I'm 30 years in IT, I never went here. I always first noted that it was when Mark Burgess put something on social media about his talks about CFEngine. Maybe people still remember CFEngine. I started Linux using Linux in 1993. So there you can guess a bit how old I am, because I started ice skating in 1974 when I was 7. And that I'm also still doing and still learning, just like the Linux. And every now and then I drink a whiskey. So why did I want to build everything from scratch? When I, 4 or 5 years ago, I wanted to do the CKA, the Certified Kubernetes Administrator exam. And I was doing a course by Moonshap Bambabet on, I think, on Code Cloud or something like that. And this is his quote. Yeah, if you really want to know how Kubernetes work, you should build it yourself. And it's not only him who did that. It's also Kelsey Hightower, well known. So I looked that up, and then I found that for that you need a Google account. So you need some credit card to do something from scratch. I thought, well, that's not my way. That's not scratch enough. So I decided to do it on hardware by myself. So I bought some Dell Optiplex Micro 6920. They're small things, like very small. I started out with a few, and in the end, I had like 8 of these. I wanted to do the course, and then I found out it is very expensive, an extra course. And then I said to my boss, I want to buy some of this hardware instead of the course, and then I'll learn. So they sponsored my first initial cluster. There's like 4 cores in each machine. There's 16 gigabit of memory. There was an SSD and an HSD in there. The HSD was later replaced by SSD. I'll get to that later. And yeah, you can still find them on refurbished web shops or on Marktplaats or whatever. Every now and then, if one breaks, I can buy a new one still. So I had the hardware layer, and I put it in my Metacast. So this is my cluster in the Metacast, of my data center it's even. And I put stickers on here for my floor manager, because sometimes I had to phone my wife and said, something is wrong and I'm on holiday, please press number 2. But yeah, she didn't know what one, so I put the stickers on, now she can press number 2 and reset it. Because every now and then, due to heat, and so the machine stopped. And you also notice maybe that 2 of them on the top are now off. It's because of the energy prices. It went so high and my daily usage was so high, I put I say, how can I get less resources? So I put them off. Put them on a reserve. So I had to decide on an OS on that hardware. So I decided to use Alpine. You know Alpine? Yeah, it's a very small OS, and I think some people also know it from containers, when you always say from Alpine, that is where you start, and then you build your container. It's very small, but it has no glibc. So that means that your binaries, which you normally download or install, most of the time don't work. And sometimes, for example, Nomad had a static binary, but it was still linked to lib64ldlinux.dat, but it is not available on Linux. Then you contact those developers and they say, yeah, but everybody has this the library. I said, no, it's not on Alpine. So some vendors changed it, but the most are still giving static binaries. We don't run on Alpine. Yeah, it's very small, and there's also nothing installed. There's also no Ansible agents running. With Ansible agents, I mean SSH, Python, Bash, all the things you need. And they're not there, so you have to install them yourself. But also, I want to use this as a virtualization layer. So I had to install an hypervisor. And luckily, that KMU was inside, KVM was inside Alpine. So I could build virtual machines running on Alpine. I started doing that, and I had the first machine running, and it was. And I tried to SSH into it, and it took a long time. Normally, when the SSH doesn't work, it's because of the reverse DNS is not correct, and then you take 30 seconds before you're in. But yeah, it took so long. And then I found out that because Alpine is doing nothing, it's just running very little processes, there's a little randomness in the system. So if you try to log in, SSH has to have some randomness to create the first key exchange. Yeah, and that took a long time before there was enough randomness. So I found out that if you do in the virtualization layer, you change the backend of the random to the backend random generator, which is on the virtual, of not on the virtual machine, but on the real host. And there's enough traffic and things happening over there. You have a nice random number. But yeah, it took me a long time to find out what was wrong with the SSH. And it's not very handy if you're trying things and every time you have to wait a long time before you could log in. But in the end, I had some Kube VMs running. So now I built the hardware, I had the OS, I had the hypervisor. I built the VMs. And then on that, I had to choose an OS. And again, I choose Alpine. So the Alpine is there running. And then I have to choose a container engine because Kubernetes uses containers. So you need to have a container engine. Or in ieder geval, you have an OS which is able to run containers. So I installed, I think, Containerd I started out with. So I didn't use Docker, but Containerd is part of Docker. And later I switched to Cryo as an alternative to run. So a bit more about Cryo. This is the picture Docker Inc. likes to show you. So if you want to run containers, you need Docker. Yeah, it's just like the hypervisor. It's between your containers and your host. Well, that's not the case. It's not true. Since 2.64, the kernel of Linux on the host, that's running the containers. It's not Docker or Containerd, or it's the kernel with the namespaces and the C groups. That makes sure that the containers run. Yeah, you don't need a container engine. You need something to start them. So this is also not completely true, because you have the OS, you have the container with the container image. Therein is a C runner, it's the container runner. There's a cron which is making sure that your output is always logged, even if the cryo dies or is gone, but the container still runs. And then you have the container API, which is Kubernetes talks to this to do all this. So you have a lot of layers to take. And I had to do this all by myself. So I had to find out how does this work, how does this, what does this do? Normally you just install Kubernetes and this is all built for you. You don't notice, but it's there. This is CRUN. I changed it to run C, I think, or the other way around because it was faster. Played with that. But yeah, I want to take you. Docker wants you to believe this, that you buy Docker or use Docker, but you don't. You don't have to. Cryo, container starts very fast. Millisecond, I think, 30 milliseconds, 10 milliseconds, that the container is started. I started with Containerd, then I switched to Cryo. And also the run C, which is starting the container, I switched to CRUN because it was smaller and it was also harder to get working with Cryo. Then you have to find out how Cryo really works, because by default it uses run C, and if you want to run CRUN, you have to change some configurations and some settings. And I talked to the developers of Cryo, and they said, it's not too easy to switch from run C to CRUN. I found that out. And also you have, of course, if you don't run Docker, you don't have the Docker tools like Docker.ps, Docker images, but you use the CRI tool, CTL tool, to do the same. You can also do CTL, TLS, container LS, and all that kind of stuff. So I had the hardware layer, the OS, I had the container, VMs on that, containers. So I had a ecosystem which could run Kubernetes. So let's get to that. Yeah, this was from scratch. Now I want to run the hard way. So I like to draw pictures when I develop or installing software and making changes to that, and at least find out how it works. So this is what I found out, what I built in the end. And here are my hardware, the cubes, or the VMs with the, this is the control plane. The control plane runs Kube Control Manager, Kube Scheduler, and Kube API Server on the installation instructions from scratch. They don't mention Kubelet. You don't need Kubelet. Yeah. And then you find out that there are still containers running on this machine, so you need Kubelet. But yeah, nobody tells you. You have to find out the hard way. And the same, I chose to have etcd outside the cluster, so I had to also investigate how etcd works. I had to create a cluster of etcd, so I have three etcd nodes, which if one fails, everything still runs, works perfectly. Then I here had the worker nodes, I would say, and they were talking to a proxy, so that it divides the traffic over the two controller nodes, and if one fails, it still works. But yeah, I also introduced a single point of failure, of course, because now if the proxy dies, nothing works anymore. So I have to, that proxy was also a VM on my system, so I had to do some stuff. So, and also you notice there's nowhere kubeproxy. Some people know kubeproxy. Yeah, so you don't need it. It's there, but and if you use it, I use it in the beginning, then you have to install it everywhere, and it does its thing. But there is also other, the CNIs you have, the Caligo, all those, you don't need a proxy anymore. And also, I use kube router, I think it was, kube router. So, and you don't need the proxy. It's also a quiz question with some Kubernetes quizzes that it says, do you need kube proxy? No, you don't. But switching from non-kube proxy to, yeah, it was also, that's nice with the VMs. It was easy. I just turned it off, nothing worked, and then I turned it on again, it worked again. To change it, that works brave. So I just installed the proxy. I had the etcd installed, Kubernetes on all nodes, and two with the control plane and the scheduler. Yeah, then I started the first node, and it's Kubelet said, I'm not going to start, you have swap. It's a long time ago, it's before 1.28 where swap is available. So yeah, I had to disable swap on all nodes, I had to again fix that. Then I tried some tricks to run 128 Busybox images on one node to see if that would work, and it didn't scale to 60. And then I found out that Alpine is very conservative in the U-limit, and I had to change the U-limit to a big number. And all the Ubuntu and all the other stuff already have that big number, but Alpine makes it small so that you not can do any fork bombs or that kind of stuff to avoid thing. Then I found out that although the kubelet and the VMs inside, of the containers inside the Kubernetes, are in containers, they still need things on the OS, and therefore the OS and the slash needs to be shared, or you can have to read out of your container inside of that out of that slash, and therefore that is not default in Ansible either, so I had to install that also, or fix that. And then I had all this stuff running, all this Kube control, and then I found out they talk to each other with certificates. So I had to create certificates to have the TLS communication between the kubelets, the API, the scheduler, and so on. So I made a picture again. Then I found out that you need a lot of, so I have to create my own CA just to get get the keys not self-signed. So then the CA is also there. So the CA signs it, but you are the CA. So it's also self-signed, but it's different, called different. And ATCD has its own CA. And well, I was writing all this down and making all those that this talks to that. And a lot of work. Normally, when you install Kubernetes, this works. And also, I've sit here 2 years. Why 2 years? Well, I created a certificate with a validity of 2 years. So after 2 years, what happens? My cluster quit. Yeah, I didn't know what. So it was a lot of reading and logs reading, and then I found out certificates expired. What certificate? And all certificates were expired, so because they were all created on the same day and all 2 years old. So luckily, I did script everything. So if you see now, days is 10,000. So 3 years ago, in 10,000 days, I will have a problem. So I don't know when that is, but I will have a problem. and here you see, this is only the Kubernetes certificate. But this, I had to find out exactly how to make this. I had to do it myself. And now I also understand how certificates work. It's very interesting. Not only the certificates, but every daemon, scheduler, API, they all need configuration options. In Alpine, none was set. So I had to find out all this list. Some are default, but some are not. And in different versions of Kubernetes, this change what is default and what you need to fill in. But so in the end, I had for the API server, I did this list. And it was pure trial and error. Oh, this one is missing. Then I started it up. It says this one is missing. I added it. This one is missing. Then I added it. Yeah. But yeah, then you find out what all those things mean. That is also very interesting. I was also very curious about this number, 32767. For me, it looked exactly like the half of 65 something, which is a 64-bit or number. And this is the Linux Imperial port range. In Linux, when you do an SSH session, you connect back to another port. And that port is always above 32768. So that's why this range is from here to here. I tell you this because I once was at a company, we had a few developers who were using port 40,000 for things. And then sometimes it didn't work and some it worked. But it was because Linux was using that 40,000 for an empirical port, and they try to start a container running on that port. So if you keep below 3,000 in this case, then you are happy. Yeah, now this V2, I never understood this because it's still V2 after these years. So I had everything started. I had the certificates running. Everything was okay, I had a configuration which I could use for the certificates to talk to the proxy, talk to the API server, and I asked, give me the nodes. What nodes are there? And my list is there, but not ready. What does that mean? It's not ready. So there's something still wrong. And also where you normally see you can't call them masters anymore, the control plane and the nodes, and there's no control plane. So. What happened? Well, the control plane was easy. It was two labels. You put it on the nodes, and now you think it's a control plane. And you said no schedule, then you know for sure that no heavy containers are scheduled on the master nodes, so that it will crash the API server, for example. So then I installed the Kube router to make everything talk together on the network level. And then I got, ready. So happy, scheduling, the control plane was there. It worked. But then also find out that if you run some Kube router, for example, it's a container that runs, but it still needs on the OS, on the host, it needs IP tables, it needs other. And because Alpine doesn't include anything, every time I started something, said, yeah, this is missing. Then I had to find out, this is missing. And then in the end, it worked. It ran. So we have everything, but that was the last instruction of the Kubernetes the hard way. Yeah, install a DNS. So if you don't install a DNS, it won't work. So that's also two simple commands. You see also that I do the DNS horizontal autoscaler. If people tell you, wow, we're in 5,000 containers in our pods in our Kubernetes network, they always have a DNS problem. Because it is every container is requesting DNS because it never knows the real address. So it has to always have the DNS translations, and it changes a lot. So that, yeah, even for my setup, I installed a DNS autoscaler which creates two DNSs. So finally, I had something running. I thought, well, let's do our first test. I run a busy box and I immediately log into it so that I can see what's happening and I can test my DNS. Well, that wouldn't work. There was something with cluster roles and cluster bindings. Didn't know that either, so I had to find out what's that. Well, in the end, I got through it, and you have to make sure that the admin all really has to may connect to containers, for example, or may do other things. But you have to do that in the cluster role and the cluster bindings. So then I tried again, and yes, I could do a DNS lookup, and I got a cluster running from scratch. But I had a cluster running. But how do you reach a cluster from the outside? That's my next question. How do I run services which can really be used? So we need something, an external load balancer, for example. That's what you see, and then you talk to the node ports. But I didn't want to use an external node balancer, so I installed an internal load balancer. It's called MetalLB. I think this one, MetalLB. I switched to kubefib and then I switched back to MetalLB because kubefib was even less reliable than MetalLB. And while I added, I not only added the load balancer, I also added an ingress controller. And that way, if you connect from the outside with an URL, the Kubernetes cluster can route based on the URL to different pods and different services. So here you see the load balancer. It has created an external IP. And if you talk to that IP, it automatically load balances to the right connections and to the right services. I used HA proxy as the ingress controller. I think the rest of the world is using Nginx, but I like it the hard way. So it's also in all, you look at problems people have, you fix it like that, but it's not how it works in HA proxy then. You have to find out it yourself. Here's an example of the ingress. It's also when you start using ingress, then you find out that if you're doing HTTPS traffic, it is also be nice to have certificates done. Now, Kubernetes also has a thing that's called Set Manager. You can install it in Kubernetes, and it will look at your ingresses and automatically create certificates. Worked perfectly. Although now you can already see that everything is connected to everything. I need to have the Let's Encrypt, and then I had to get the certificate, and then I have a special commands for HA proxy to do it right, and that also changed in the years. So next, I need storage. I had services running. I had a web server running. But where does it store your web pages or whatever it was? In the end, I was just trying to make one website for myself with one user per day. But For WordPress, I also needed a Maria or a MySQL database. So that, yeah. So I installed a container storage interface so that I could do PVs and PVC globally. Because if you don't install anything, then you can just run it only on the local node. And if you move a container, the data is gone, but it's because it's on the other node. So that is not by default. Then I again found out that the nodes, they do the real magic. There you have to install the right drivers, and you have to install NFS or Ceph, you have to install there. So it's the Kubernetes doesn't do much, but it's the nodes that do the stuff. And I say Ceph, wait a minute, for Ceph heb je eigenlijk ook een, you also need a cluster. So I built a Ceph cluster. all those nodes had the extra HSD. There was an SSD in there, and there was an extra HSD, which is not used. I made them to OSDs. I installed 3 VMs with Ceph in there. And I started trying to run Ceph. Didn't work, because although it does work with certificates, you have to have all trust relationships between all the infrastructure. So again, we had a lot of, keyring things and put things in and to let them talk to each other. Again, I was doing Alpine. It was from the ground up. I didn't know any. There was nothing configured. You had to do it all yourself. And I think it's better now, but yeah, in those days, it was not. And I made a picture. I don't know. I still understand what I did, but it works. Yeah, and then in the end, I even had a web page of Ceph, and Ceph talks Prometheus or has a Prometheus agent, and Prometheus, which is running inside Kubernetes, is checking Ceph and logging it. It's very nice.
I have a question.
Yeah. Outside. I don't believe in things in Kubernetes, because if Kubernetes crash, then and also you have Rogue, for example, but then you need iSCSI. And iSCSI was not on Alpine. It was there, but it was not state aware. So if you rebooted an Alpine node, you lost your iSCSI. I also sent an email to the maintainers, but it took a long time to fix that. So I had those HDD there. I found that it's a bit slow, so I changed from HDD to SSD. And because I'm not so big, I could buy some five cheap disks somewhere. But it didn't speed up anything, because it was not the disks, it was the network. I had the 1 gig network, which did all traffic, my downloads, and even the Ceph traffic and the Kubernetes traffic, and it didn't, no. And sometimes when I rebooted the Ceph node, it was a long time out of quorum, but it was due to NTP. Then it was, the date was, the time was wrong, and I had to reset the time, and then it worked. But yeah, I didn't like that too much. It took too much time. That's why the picture is there. So now I had it all running, and it was all going well. So a new version of Kubernetes came out. Had to do something, I think, because I wanted to run the latest of the latest. So I started upgrading, and there's a special way to do that. Or special, there's a way to do that. That is, you drain the node, you wait for that, and because I have a slow Ceph cluster, that took some time. Then you do upgrades your node, APK upgrade. Then I reboot it, then you uncordon the node, you reboot it, and you do the next step, and next step. And then you also learn that if you have exactly as many nodes as you have processes or pods, which can be put on those nodes, and you don't have any room left, then if you drain one, it cannot put the pods on something else. So you have to have one node, which is already empty, so that the pods can move there. You find that out. Why is it moving? So, but it took a lot of time. I had to do all those commands, I typed them, and And then I thought, well, maybe the control plane is HI, CAT2. So why do you have to drain or whatever? I just reboot it, upgrade it and reboot it. And then, yeah, it came up. And then I did the other one, and it came up. And everything was more happy. So, and after that, I thought, well, maybe that's also available for the nodes. Why Alpine boots in 10 seconds, the containers boot in milliseconds. Why not just upgrade a reboot? And indeed, it's, I call it YOLO ops, you only live once operation. I just reboot the node, upgrade the node, reboot it, do the next one, have a sleep in there for 60 seconds. Yeah, you can make it 30, I think. And my cluster upgrades. Of course, that is ideal, but some things go wrong, of course, when you do this. For example, when all those configuration items for the API server change, yeah, the API server doesn't work anymore. It says I need this setting to be correct, or the setting has changed. That's one thing. I'm doing this rebooting already for 4 years and 113 days. This was yesterday. So this is my cluster now. It still works and still keeps running. But it's also true if you you turn everything off, you turn it off, the days don't change to zero. They just keep counting. The API server keeps counting. Yeah. YOLO ops, some people call it chaos engineering. As I already said, if the configuration items change, it's not always ideal. It's also if you have pods with a container image, which is latest, you can also get a lot of surprises. If you reboot the node and it comes up, and then your kube router is upgraded from version 1 to version 2, and kube router is making everything connecting together. So one day I rebooted one node, didn't automatic script and with a sleep 60, and then after 7 times 60 seconds, my cluster was down completely because kube router was not running anymore because all the configuration setting had changed. I had to fix that by hand. The other thing is that databases don't handle just the reboot command very well if they're running inside the container. So Postgres sometimes had some errors and then I had to be locked. It's mirrored so you could, but then the mirror was down and the other one learned a lot about that too. And the same for, what was it, Prometheus. Is of course hammering its database a lot, and if you just reboot it, sometimes data got corrupted. And then if Prometheus is starting, it's checking all the logs, and if it's the last one, it is first checking, then crashes on the last one, you have to wait, exactly if you're using a slow Ceph cluster. And then there is also some problem that if the API server doesn't hear anything from the kubelet in 5 minutes, it says it's down. So if you're rebooting stuff, you don't notice until after 5 minutes that things are down, or that the API server thinks that things are down. So there was I also learned to take a look sometimes sooner than after 5 minutes to do things. And then there is the API changes. So in a lot of YAML, the API then slash v1 beta, and one day that is gone. And then also strange things happen. So you have to watch out what is deprecated. So every time a new release comes, which is a major release, I always check what's going on there to make sure that this works. To wrap things up, I didn't use kubeKDM. That was not available 4 years and 130 days ago. I think it's now available on Alpine. So then you will start a whole cluster all based in containers. Even the API server is running in container and everything is running on a container. But it's not. I also wonder how cloud providers do that. They also have a control plane. Where is that running? What is that doing? And I'm also very curious how they do that with the certificates. Are the certificates automatically upgrading, or I'm interested. I also didn't use Helm. I think Helm is like RPM is a package manager where you don't understand what's happening, but you just install something. And then there are two flags you set, but there are, in the end, there are 400, and you only set two, so you don't know what you're doing, I think. So it's maybe better just to run the YAMLs. It's the same for KubeSpray and Minikube. Because I didn't use them, I understand now how Kubernetes works. And I'm still learning. If you now look, if I do a get pods, I got 33 pods running my website with one visitor today, which is me checking if my website runs. But not true. In the meantime, I have Prometheus running, Grafana, Influx, some R stack, so Jellyfin and Radar and Sonar. And I even got a DSCP server inside it with two separate pods. Then you also learn how to make sure that the pods are not on the same node, because then your DSCP goes down if your node goes down. And I recently started using Argo CD, which I do like, but also when it fails, it is not so very informative of Argo CD itself. It's informative about what it's doing, but when Argo CD itself is failing, it's difficult. So, any questions? Thank you.
So, roughly, how much time did it take you before you had your cluster up and running? I'm curious about both the work time and the time span for
learning. Yeah, the time span, I think it's a half a year.
Okay.
Then on the physical hardware, because on my laptop I also have the Vagrant, did some tricks. It's not all this way. And 1 hour a day, in the evening, 2 hours,
really
weekend. That is, you start with nothing, so you, it takes a lot of time, but you learn a lot. That's my,
Having dealt with all this manually, when you now install Kubernetes, are there some things you still want to do manually now that you have all this experience?
Yeah, I'm now no longer for my work, I don't need to do Kubernetes anymore. So.
Okay, what parts would you still do manually?
None.
None.
But then if it breaks, I know what breaks. And also I'm curious how they do it. Are those set to cassette, for example? Yeah. So, but yeah, of course you do AKS or whatever. If you have the credit cards, you do it. So.
Why use VMs?
In the beginning, I thought, well, then I can migrate a VM. And then my Kubernetes cluster keeps running. And in the end, the YOLA ops would say, okay, put it on hardware. But yeah, I didn't change that. And I'm also now switching to Proxmox, because that came in all the first commands. And I forgive, it's too chaotic nowadays.
So you stick to VMs, but on Proxmox this time? So you stick to VMs, but yet you use Proxmox for that?
Yeah. I used Alpine with KMU for that, and I used Proxmox. And of course, there's also a mail server running. I got 30 VMs running.
Did you try other tools for managing Kubernetes, like K3S?
Yes, of course. I installed K3S on Raspberry Pis and everywhere. Yeah. I tried a lot, but this is my. What I did, and I tried, of course, a lot.
Why did you choose to set the other auto storage? There are other auto storage options like another roof and something like that. Why set?
Yeah, I just because I had I was in a company that used Ceph, so I was also interested for what's what are they talking about? And it was easy to set up, and it was available in Alpine. That's also easy. Yeah.
You attempted to try again with Ceph after you can find an affordable way to go past one gear.
Sorry.
Are you tempted to try Ceph again? Are you still using Ceph?
Yes, yes.
Still using it even though it's yeah. Slightly?
Yeah, but now my SSDs are failing because they're 100% aware. So I've tried to switch to something. In the beginning I used NFS, but then you have a single point of failure. So I didn't like that. But also the hardware sometimes crashes. So yeah. But yeah, I cannot use a 10 gig network or a 100 gig. I don't have that at home. This is what I have. So I'm looking to other solutions.
Have you tried Longhorn?
Yes. Longhorn, of course, I thought in the beginning this was Rook or the same. It also needs iSCSI. So I didn't have iSCSI, so I didn't try it as a jam.
From your perspective, would you suggest using Ceph or
Ceph.
Something like NFS or what kind of storage? If you were to run a start from Greenfield, your own clustering, what kind of storage backend would you choose these days?
Yeah, professionally, I mean HPC, so they have the cluster. Or the if you do a NFS parallel NFS version 4 with a storage optimized SSDs, mm-hmm. then use that. But at home, at home you have to choose something, and I could choose Ceph. I wouldn't do it again. I think no.
You wouldn't.
No. Yeah, but because now what I say, the SSDs are now wearing because it's always writing and stuff, and the performance is.
It's not a really good alternative, right?
No, yeah, NFS, but that is single point of failure.
Yeah.
So you have parallel NFS, but No. And also all my CSI is also Ceph, so all my pods are talking to Ceph. And if I have to migrate them, I have to go into the pod, I have to copy the data out. It's not so easy all. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.